This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm Brett Boone, and today on the program, I sit down with a four-time Gold Glover, World Series champion, Cubbies Hall of Famer. He's currently lead TV color man for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Welcome, Mark Grace. Gracie, thanks for coming on the program.
Booney, it's always a pleasure. It's been too long, pal. How are you?
It's been a while. Yeah, you're over in Arizona. I'm not far from you. I was just over there the other day. I went over
where
to see
you, where
my...
Where are you at now, Booney?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
I'm in You've San been there Diego, a while. Yeah. Still over here paying the huge taxes.
Well, come on out to Arizona. We'd love to have you.
Yeah. We played against each other for a long time. We haven't been in contact for a long time. I'm watching you over there doing the Arizona. I'm going into this podcast, and I always do. And you remember when I was a kid in Cincinnati, I'd always get to first. I'd be like, Gracie, I'm following your lead today. Because it seemed like every time I played you, you got a lot of hits. And I thought I just wanted him to rub off of me a little bit. Getting ready for this show today, I looked at the number. I didn't know. I knew how good of a player you were. I didn't know you had more hits than anyone in the 90s. Everybody. That's a lot of people.
You know, that's probably Booney as far as my career. I was fortunate enough to play 16 years in the major leagues, but that feat, for lack of a better word, is probably the biggest feather in my cap that I could have. You know, I think if you ask most baseball fans who had the most hits in the 90s, you'd get, well, that had to be Gwynn, or
right,
or that had to be Palmeiro, or that had to be Biggio, or Kirby Puckett, or something like that. But lo and behold, the most hits in the 90s and also the most doubles in the 90s is probably my best feat. You know, yeah, there was other things that I'm very proud of, but only one person can say that they had the most hits in a decade.
I mean, it's awesome. And I don't make light of it because, you know, I have a lot of guys on the show and a lot of the guys have been huge credentials and we all know that.
Of course.
But just looking at that really did, and not just bullshitting, that jumped out at me like, geez, I knew Gracie and how many, you know, how good of a hitter he was. 300 career. That to me jumps off the page. Anybody that hit 300 over it's tough enough to hit 300. I did it a few times.
Right.
But to have that for a career, people don't understand how impressive that is and how tough it is. But I saw the 90s and I'm going, that's exactly what I thought. First thing was, how did he beat Gwynn out?
Exactly.
That's the first thing that came to mind, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, thank you. Obviously, we played against each other for a long time, and we had a lot of respect for each other. Like I said, I couldn't wait for you to get on first base or for me to get on second base so we could bullshit. And that was the thing about you and I, Booney, you and I had fun doing what we did. Yeah, it was a grind. But at the same time, I thought you and I did a really good job of having fun at a kid's game. And I have no regrets. I will never look back on my career, Booney, and say, you know what, Grace, you should have had more fun. I don't have that regret. I had a hell of a lot of fun.
No, we had a lot of fun. I want to talk about Wrigley Field a little bit.
Okay.
Once I left Cincinnati, I went to Seattle. I think I got back to Wrigley one time.
Okay.
I loved it. But I want the perspective of someone that played there for a lot of years. You came up to the big leagues in 88. You didn't leave till after the 2000 season. And the psychology of playing at Wrigley. I loved coming there. The day games, you know as well as anybody, the cities you like are the cities that you hit best in.
Oh, of course. Well, yeah.
So if you went in and came out of there with a good series, it didn't matter the city you were in. It didn't matter the ballpark, the aesthetics. It's bottom line. It comes down to hits. I just happened to have some days. It seemed like we fell on the right time. The wind was blowing out more than it was blowing in. I just liked everything about it. Now, I didn't like the playing surface since it's been redone and leveled
back
out.
Back in our day, yeah, the infield that was in terrible shape. You're right.
It was terrible. There were lips everywhere. It felt you were on deck, like you needed a tow rope to get to home plate. It's like you were walking uphill. Everything was going against you. But like I said, I loved it. Talk about the psychology playing there for a long time. And it's different. This is why I thought the Cubs would never win. I thought, all those day games.
Yep.
It's different because as big league players, we're programmed. The schedule is for 5 night games a week, at least 5 or 6. And then you have
any day games
on Sunday. And most people that play in a normal place where day games aren't prominent, you get into a routine and it's like, wait a minute, I don't want to wake up tomorrow at 8 o'clock for a day game. You go to Wrigley, you kind of set your mind for it, but being the home team and that is your life, explain the advantages, disadvantages. Did you like it?
Well, first of all, Chicago, being a Chicago Cub was, I'm honestly sorry, Booney, that you never got to spend at least one season with the Chicago Cubs. That's how cool it is to be a Cub. And I played on some bad teams. I wasn't on the championship team, but we had good players. I played with Hall of Famers Andre Dawson, Ryne Sandberg, Greg Maddux. We had some guys that could hit, but we'd have to beat you, 12-10 because we really struggled on the mound. And here's the thing about Wrigley, and I don't know if you'll agree with me or not here, Booney, but you come in as a visiting player. You got 3 games. So you got 3 day games. A 3-game series is no big deal for an opponent. It's like, man, this is actually kind of nice. But I'm telling you, Booney, I had guys come to first base on that third day on that nightcap of the 3-game series and just say, Gracie, man, I can't wait to get out of here and go play some night games again. And so honestly, in April and May in Chicago, you played in Cincinnati, you played in cold weather, but not quite as cold as Chicago.
When that wind whips up,
and Wrigley Field faces north. Okay. So a cold north wind blows straight in. And it's the biggest ballpark in Major League Baseball for about 2 months. And then as it starts to warm up, a warm summer breeze blows out. So once but it doesn't get really considerably warm till towards the end of June in Chicago. And also when the wind does blow out, it's usually from the right field foul pole to the left field foul pole. And I'll bet you, you figured that out. So I always felt like if you were a right-handed hitter, a right-handed pull hitter or a left-hander with some juice to left field, you're going to thrive at Wrigley Field. Now, I know you had big opposite field power, but I remember a couple of bombs you hit onto Waveland Avenue. And, you know, and also the first thing you did at Wrigley Field, when you arrived at Wrigley Field, you checked the flags, did you not?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember Rick Sutcliffe telling me, he goes, I loved pitching when the wind blew out. And I'm like, are you out of your goddamn mind? What are you talking about? He goes, because I knew I was going to give up some runs. He said, but I knew that opposing pitcher was really, really worried that the wind was blowing out that day. And he was probably going to go out there tight and nervous and give it up. He goes, I won more games with the wind blowing out than I did with the wind blowing in. So, you know, there's nuances to Wrigley Field that nowhere else. And Booney, one last thing about Wrigley. At no other major league ballpark does the weather affect the game more than Wrigley Field because of that wind and because of the cold or because of the heat. It's just the weather affects the game so much there more than any other circular stadium or anything like that. That's just my feeling.
No, I agree with you. I mean, Fenway, it would be affected a little bit. And I think that's because of the bleachers are a lot lower than your modern day big league ballpark.
True.
But you mentioned that, Sutcliffe, great point, because when you're the home team, at some point you've got to get over the environment, almost use it to your advantage.
Absolutely.
It's like when Colorado came into the league. Think about your pitchers when you were headed to Colorado. They'd start counting the days down. And back then we didn't have our cell phones. So it was USA Today. Okay, where is my start going to fall? Hopefully it doesn't. But as soon as it's going to fall in Colorado, they're already mentally going through it.
Oh, they had that Coors Field bad back, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
My hamstrings bother me. You know, I'll be ready to go when we go to San Francisco, but I'm going to have to sit this one out. Yeah.
I got this question for you, and I don't know if this is a good, comparison, but I remember this is the early 2000s for me. And I had, you know, I'm struggling with my contact lenses. I've got astigmatism, but I've also got a separate contact lens for, different days, and I've got allergies, and some days my vision's great, sometimes it's not. So this is what I started doing, Gracie. On the way to the ballpark in Seattle, I'd be driving across the bridge, and I had checkpoints. There were certain signs that I would go to, so I'd put my contacts in, drive to the ballpark, and there were certain signs. I knew if they were very bright and lit up and clear, it was going to be a good day for me.
That's classic.
And then if that sign was a little bit out of sync or it wasn't crystal clear, I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be one of those days.
I'm battling
in between ABs. I'm going to be flip-flopping. So
I'm trying to draw walks today, exactly.
Yeah, it started to wear on me after a while mentally. I'm wondering for you, did you wake up in the morning? Did you have certain tells wherever you were living? Did you look at a certain flag or certain to find out, now I know what the wind's going to be like today?
No, I mean, you could tell by usually, like I said, you know, if it's chilly, good chance the wind's going to be blowing in. And honestly, Booney, like, this is back when I used to watch the weather the night before to find out what kind of a day we're going to have the next day. Okay, if it's going to be in the 50s or 60s, pretty good chance that wind's going to be blowing in. But if it all of a sudden got a little balmy, and you know, it can get balmy in the Midwest, you know, God, now you're playing 95 degrees with 90% humidity. I mean, you can pop a ball up and it would go out of the ballpark. So, it's such an interesting place to play. And, you know, back when we played, you know, the clubhouses were really small, and the dugouts were, you know, made for guys that were 5'6", you know, back in the early, you know, 1900s. And so you'd stand up and hit your head on the freaking dugout, and you're just like, God dang it. You know, and now you're trying to fight off a concussion and hit 95 miles an hour. But yeah, it was a special place. I got to play there for 13 years. I got to play with some unbelievable players. And the one thing about Cub fans, Booney, is no matter if you were hitting 220 or 320, if they saw that you were giving them a solid effort, if you were busting your butt for them, they loved you. They loved you. If you were lazy and didn't give a shit, then they wanted you out on the next plane.
Yeah, it is a special place. And there are certain venues that we played throughout our career. You know, Fenway didn't set up for me. That wall to left, I'd get it in my brain. It's just a pop up there. But you know, especially as my career went on, my strength was going the other way. Well,
yeah, you have a lot of juice to write.
Yeah,
you.
Fenway didn't lend itself for me. It was a deep right center field fence, and
it's short, a long ways out there to write.
Right. It would get me out of my rhythm because I know that wall's, you know, it seems like it's 100 feet away from me, but you know how that can get you out of your swing. So, yeah. But I loved, let's be honest, a day game at Fenway Park, nice day, pitching change. You're sitting there talking to your fellow infielder. I remember having some days there with Johnny Olerud and just looking around during a pitching change and go, Big Rude, do you realize how cool this is, what we do for a living? Because we don't always, when we're playing, we're grinding so hard about, you know, exactly, who we facing tomorrow, where are we going, winning games. You don't really get times where you sit back until the end, it seems like, or after we're done playing, and really appreciate how lucky we were to be able to do what we did. I remember late in my career sitting at Fenway Park, afternoon game. I knew I was getting close to retiring. I think it was in 2005. And I was just looking around. For the first time, I kind of sat there and go, wow, this is so cool. My grandpa played here. I never thought about that. I thought about how many hits.
You come from such a baseball family.
Yeah, I always thought about how many, you know, I got to find a way to grind out some hits tonight. Pedro's on the mound. I got to get a knock and a walk. And I never really stopped to smell the roses, not to have a goofy cliche, but it is. Wrigley's one of those places. It's definitely a special place, a ton of history there. Right. And when you talk about pop-up versus biggest ballpark in the world, you're not kidding. I remember on a night game there one time, wind's blowing dead in. I hit the ball as far as I can possibly hit it. I mean, on a normal day. And I remember it hitting the basket over the 367 and going, that's all I got. And then, like you said, when the wind was reversed and it was a warm day, you could pop it up. As long as you got it up, it would just keep going.
As long as you got it on the barrel. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the tale of two worlds.
So many times, like, you know, we call it pimping home runs or admiring home runs. And I watched hundreds of players in my playing days with the wind blowing in, hit a ball and just admire it at home plate.
Yeah.
And, you know, flip his bat in the air and start going into his trot, and the outfielder going back maybe two steps and make it. I mean, it's not even to the track.
And you better go.
and they'd come by and they'd have, you know, I'm playing first base, and they'd have these bewildered looks on their faces, and I'd just be, welcome to Wrigley, dude. And you know, but once again, I played, you know, in over 1,000 games there, you know, so you see the pop-ups that go out, and you also see, you know, the absolute bombs that are caught. And it's just crazy.
And a place that was like that too, a little bit, but you couldn't tell. It was more of, you had to guess, was Candlestick.
Oh, you played at Candlestick.
I was at Candlestick before the new stadium. And I remember some ball. I remember there one day, Jeff Kent hit a ball with the bases loaded, and I mean absolutely leaned on it. This ball's, he hit it 450 feet.
And he had pop, yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And it went to the warning track and it got caught. And I
oh,
went,
my Lord.
Oh my goodness. I haven't seen a ball hit that hard and not go out. And I, you know how some balls just cut through the wind when it's just back leg. But I saw that, I saw it there, but I could imagine Wrigley, same thing. It's like, you know, you're thinking as a hitter, well, okay, it's blowing in, but I can't hit that ball better. So that's still going to get out. And then right. It doesn't get out. And it's like you, oh no, it just, that mental, that the, those wheels start yeah. turning.
And going back to Candlestick, first of all, Candlestick sucked. And
it did.
The worst part, yeah, I can deal with conditions, wind and bad playing surface. But the worst thing about Candlestick, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, Booney, having to walk all the way across the field to the clubhouse with those, I'm sorry, asshole San Francisco Giants fans throwing crap at you. You know, you're dodging oranges and you're dodging, you know, anything they can find, because you have to walk all the way across to the clubhouse and deal with those diehards that are there all night in the freezing weather. And God love them. I wouldn't have had it any other way.
And it's amazing too. People don't know this until the end. There was no toilet. There was no toilet in the visiting dugout. There was a urinal. There, but there's no toilet.
I had that one time. I had to go number two in about the third inning, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So I had to wait until I knew I wasn't gonna be up. I was up like sixth or seventh that inning. So I'm like, the last out was made for the Giants in the bottom half, and I'm playing first base. And instead of running into the dugout, the third base dugout there, I just sprint out to right field, go in, and Harvey Hosierny, the clubhouse guy, he's looking at me like, Gracie, what do you want? I'm like, you know what I need to do. And I did what I had to do. And then I had my glove with me, you know, and all that. And I just ran out right to first base when the inning was over. So it's funny that you say that, because I had to deal with that one time.
Yeah. All right. Change courses a little bit here. After 13 years as a Cub, you go to Arizona. 2001, Brenly is the skipper there.
Yes.
Famous story. Is it true that the paper napkin in spring training where here's our rules?
That's absolutely true. It's a true story. I was there, and it was probably the best welcome to preseason speech I'd ever seen, because he's like, because you know, earlier Buck Showalter, who I thought was a great manager, but you know, he's taken over, you know, a new team. He's taken over a team with a bunch of young people, you know, with some older veterans sprinkled here and there, but you know, they were going to lose a bunch of games. So he had to kind of micromanage a little bit, not only the game, but also his players and his clubhouse and all that. So, you know, and he was a bit of a stickler for rules and stuff like that. And, you know, from the way you wore your socks to, you know, to how, just whatever, you know how it is. And then Brenly came in. He said, okay, we're not going to, you know, here's my rules. And he holds up a cocktail napkin that he had gone somewhere the night before. He said, be on time and bust your ass. And that was his rules, and we just all laughed our butts off and went out and played really well that year.
When did you know that year that you had special team? I mean, I from an opponent standpoint, I looked at it, and I'm like, well, anytime you got Randy and Schilling, and they're healthy, and they can pitch, those are guys back in the day where 3 days rest, no big deal, especially in the postseason. Yeah. We saw it that year.
Yeah. Honestly, and, buddy, I'm
so not, I didn't question that one too. But
no, I'll answer that was my 01 was my first year with the Diamondbacks. I had always been with the Cubs, so the spring training for the Diamondbacks back then was down in Tucson, and I had always been in Mesa, Arizona with the Cubs for all those years. So I'm driving down, and I get to the clubhouse, and my first day in, I walk in, manager's office, Bob Brindley's right there. Hey, Skipper, Mark Grace, good to see you. And I knew him from prior. He used to be a broadcaster with the Cubs. And, you know, exchange our pleasantries. And then I walk into the clubhouse area, and I look over. There's Randy Johnson's locker, and there's Curt Schilling's locker. There's Matt Williams' locker. There's Luis Gonzalez's locker. There's Steve Finley's locker. There's Reggie Sanders' locker. And I'm just looking. I'm like, I have never been on a more star-studded team. And I'm like, you know, I was kind of, you know, myself, Rhino, Sammy, you know, I was expected to be to carry the mail, help lead that ball club, both in the clubhouse and on the field. I'm like, man, I just need to fit in with these guys. There are so many good players on this team that I'm just like, this is incredible. And then during spring training, we went out there and just, I could just see this team. If something miraculous doesn't happen, we're going to be a handful. And obviously that was a great team you were on too. Unfortunately, the Yankees clipped you guys.
They did.
But, you know, and honestly, I look back and I say, you know, even though that World Series, you know, that we ended up winning in 7 games in dramatic fashion, Booney, I don't know if we'd have beat the Seattle Mariners. I got to be honest with you.
Well, you know, it was such a weird year, you know, obviously 9/11 hit. And, you know, not that that's not an excuse for anybody because we all went through the same thing.
Right, right.
You know, for us, I get asked that question, what happened? You know, you win that many games, you win 116. Well, you're seeing it in modern day. You're seeing 111 win Dodgers teams a year ago get knocked off by your Diamondbacks 3-0. Yeah, so,
exactly.
So it's getting to a point, especially in the modern game, where it used to be that sprint. You know, in the 70s, it's like there's two teams going to the playoffs in each league, and usually the best teams are there at the end. Nowadays, it's the best team doesn't necessarily be crowned. I look at that Mariner team,
so
and it's like, yeah, that Mariner team, we went through Cleveland, didn't really play well, but that was a team where we just expected to win. We'd roll in, and I think if there's anything, you know how it is when you look back, when you didn't get it done, and you think, why? My excuse now is we took it for granted. We just thought we won so many games that year.
You spoil yourself rotten.
Right, and it wasn't from an ego standpoint. It wasn't an egocentric team. It was a pretty humble team full of veterans and really good players.
Yeah.
I just think we had won so many games and won so many series that we didn't go in there and just think, oh, we just roll. But we did. We assumed that, no, it's not a matter of whether we're going to win the series. It's a matter of whether we're going to sweep it or we're just going to win 2 out of 3. And I think we went into New York, didn't play that well, and we're leaving just shell-shocked. Like,
yeah,
this isn't the way the magic carpet ride is supposed to finish, because I'd never played on a team that was that in sync all year.
You guys, we actually came up to Seattle and played you guys in a 3-game
series.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And you guys took us 2 out of 3. And I remember our number 3 pitcher threw a beautiful game against you guys, a guy named Miguel Batista. Mm. And he threw a beautiful game, and he got Ichiro to go 0-for-5. That didn't happen very often with Ichiro.
No.
And I said, as we're in the clubhouse enjoying our post-game Hawaiian punch, I'm like, I'm like, by the way, that might not have been a very good thing to do to Ichiro 0-for-5, because that son of a bitch is going to come out. I mean, he's gonna come out and be ready. And I think he got 7 hits in the next 2 games. And you guys just boat raced us. And we were a good team, and you guys just made it look easy against us. And that I think that's what you're talking about. That year, that regular season for you guys, it was easy.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was weird. And like I said, people ask you about it all the time. The only thing I hate about it was such a great year and so awesome that there's a little bit of a negative connotation whenever but that 0-1 team, you guys choked. Well, I don't look at it as choked.
No, you didn't.
Just looked at it. You know, I wish we'd have finished the deal, but it just shows you how hard this game is.
And, exactly.
And when you win a World Series, how special that is. You got to win one. Most people dream of it. And then some people, you know, we both have buddies that got 3 or 4, and it's like, oh, must be nice. 3 or 4 rings.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
And also think about it, Booney. By far, in my opinion, by far the best player I ever played against was a guy named Barry Bonds.
Without a doubt.
No rings.
No rings. Griffey.
No rings.
Best player I ever played with early in my career. I played, you know, with Kenny. Never even got to a World Series, let alone win a ring.
Two of the best players we ever saw. No rings. Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Bonds.
Yep. Talk about that stretch a little bit. 9/11 hits. Obviously, we all, you know, go through what we go through. We play on. Probably that year, Arizona Diamondbacks, in any other year, the underdog, the nation would be pulling for you guys. But because it was 9/11, because it was New York,
right.
I think the Yankees had everybody except for the people in Arizona were pulling for the Yankees to win. The things that I remember about that series watching was George Bush throwing out the first pitch.
That was unbelievable.
Take me through that series.
Okay. Well, first of all, there's always pre-series hype. We had just beat the Atlanta Braves, you know, those Braves teams, really we had just kind of made mincemeat out of them. We kind of kicked them around. And so the New York media, and you know all about the New York media, they decided that the Diamondbacks, we were not worthy opponents for the Yankees. We're not worthy opponents. And you know, it should have been the Braves and Yankees, but instead these, you know, who are this expansion team, you know, who the heck, you know. So that's what we're hearing. So that we had the home field advantage because it was a coin flip that, you know, the National League got the home field. We go out and we beat Andy Pettit 3-1. Schilling got the ball, not Randy Johnson, for game one. And, you know, that's a tough choice for a manager, you know, like, you know, quite possibly the best left-hander of all time, or a guy that's not in the Hall of Fame, but he's still really, really good. And so he gave the ball to Schilling in game one, and Schilling goes out and he beats Andy Pettit. I think we beat him 3-4-1. And it was just an exciting, you know, nut-cutting game. Then the next game we come out and we were facing Mike Mussina. And it's Randy Johnson against Mike Mussina. We go out in game two, and Craig Counsell hits a long ball in the bottom of the first inning, and we go out and we cruise to another victory. So now we're flying back. Now we fly back to New York City, and we go. We were invited to Ground Zero, and I'll try to keep this as short as possible, but it's tough to keep this short. But we the Diamondbacks went down there, and we saw this devastation. It was still smoldering, Booney. Yeah, and honestly, that's the first time in my life and only time in my life that I smelled death. And I don't ever want to smell that again, Booney, ever. But it was one of the most important things I ever did in my life was go down to Ground Zero. And we met the emergency workers and the firefighters and all the heroes that survived Ground Zero. And, And half of those people were like, hey, take it easy on the Yankees, you guys, come on, you know, and all that. And the other half were like, we love you guys, we're Mets fans, you know. So you know, they still had their admiration for baseball after all they had been through in 9/11. And it was just one of the coolest things I've ever done, even though it was, I'll never forget it because of what I witnessed and what I smelled.
Yeah, it was, because we were there the series before you, and they whooped us, but we went down and did that same tour, and it was.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and that's back, once again, we don't have any, all we have is our memories. Yeah. You know, today you'd have video and you'd have it, you could replay it.
I'd have had my phone out and doing all that.
But I try to explain it to people. I remember just walking around with they made you put the hard hat on
and
walk around, and it was nothing like I've ever seen before.
Oh yeah. So now I'm going to fast forward to the actual baseball, since you asked me about it. So we go out and we're facing in no particular order. We're facing Clemens. We're facing El Duque and I think it was Mussina again. So anyway, Clemens beats us 2-1. And then El Duque, my only World Series home run, I hit a home run off El Duque in game 4. And I swear to God, Booney, it went in the upper deck. You know, I didn't have huge pop, but I upper decked El Duque. So to this day, you know, and I said, El Duque knows my name. So, so anyway, we had a closer named Byung-Young Kim, South Korean guy that had amazing stuff. And he comes out in the eighth inning of that we were up 2-1. So it was game 4. He comes out in the eighth inning, strikes out the side, just dominates, and gets 3 of the easiest outs you'll ever see. You know, Bernie Williams and, you know, you just great, you know, the great hitters they had. And then next thing you know, get a couple out, get a base hit in the ninth inning, get a couple outs, and Tino Martinez hits a home run to tie up the game. We go to extra innings. Jeter shanks one about 290 feet down the right field line. And I'm like, all right, that's the third out. Let's go. And it goes in the first row. And we just lose in awful fashion. So now 2-2. Fast forward to the next game. Kind of the same story. We get to Mussina a little bit, and we're up. And we're up by 2 this time. We bring in Byung-Young Kim again. Gets a couple guys out. Paul O'Neill gets on first base. And then Scott Brosius takes a slider and hits it in the left field seats for a 2-run homer to tie the game in the bottom of the ninth with 2 outs again. And then, unfortunately, I think Chuck Knobloch walked us off with a base hit, with a game-winning base hit. And we just lose in heart-crushing fashion again. So we felt like this series should have been wrapped up in 5 games. Instead, we're flying back to the desert down 3-2. And we're just like, Jesus, what happened? So we get back, game 6. Randy Johnson's pitching against Andy Pettit. And I'll be honest. We had Andy's pitches. We had them. He tipped every pitch out of the stretch. He didn't tip anything out of the windup, but he tipped it out of the stretch. So I'm going to try to show you what he did, Booney. Okay. If he was throwing a fastball, he'd out of the stretch, he'd bring it and he'd pop. He'd pop his glove and come down. If he was throwing off speed, he would just come down smooth. That's how blatant it was. Fastball, bring it up, pop, smooth with an off speed. So our leadoff hitter was a little fast dude named Tony Womack. We said, all right. We said, Tony, your job is to get on base and get this son of a gun in the stretch. Because if we get him in the stretch, we're going to get his ass. sure enough, Tony started with a double, and we went on to win that game like 16-2 or something like that. We just boat raced him in game six. And then game seven came, and it was and Randy Johnson threw a beautiful game. And then game seven came. It was one of the classic game sevens, pitching duels of Roger Clemens and Curt Schilling that you'll ever see. And, Soriano, we're winning by a run. Soriano hits a two-run homer in the top of the eighth inning to put the Yankees up, I think, 2-1 or 3-2. And you know what that means. When you go to the eighth inning against the New York Yankees, Mariano Rivera.
Yep.
You know? And so we see that sucker. Here he comes trotting in the bottom of the eighth inning. And we're like, oh, boy. You're like, he's never blown a World Series save. He is, in my opinion, the greatest closer that ever lived. So he strikes out the side in the eighth inning. And my second favorite memory of my career was I'm leading off the ninth inning. And I get a base hit to center field. And now we're like, you know, we're down a run, but, you know, it's still Mariano Rivera. Yeah, I got a base hit. And Bob Brindley made his greatest managerial move of his career. He pinch ran for me because you know me, Booney. If I raced a pregnant lady, I'd come in third. So he pinch ran for me, a faster guy named David DeLucci. So, you know, I can, you know, this was 20 something years ago, Booney. I can remember that whole inning, you know, just nothing. We drop a bunt. Mariano throws it into center field. He was one of the best fielders that ever played. And he threw it into center field. So now we bunt again. You know, first and second, nobody. Bunt again. They get a force out at third base. So now we're sitting at first and second, one out. Tony Womack hits a double on a Mariano Rivera cutter. He was a left-handed hitter, a cutter about 6 inches inside. Tony finds a way to get the head on the ball, hits a double down the line, tie game, second and third, one out. So now Craig Counsell comes up and gets hit by a pitch. Now it's bases loaded. And here comes Gonzo. Joe Torre decides, I'm going to play the infield in. Gonzo hits the famous little bloop that if the infield was back, it would have been easily caught by Jeter. Mm-hmm. But Torre decided to play the infield in. And, you know, it'll never be a line drive in the book because it wasn't. But it was the coolest bloop I've ever seen. And honestly, you just saw a bunch of grown men out there just with tears in their eyes, crying, just jumping all over each other like little kids. It was amazing.
It is too, because the infield's in, and on the telecast, as soon as Gonzo hits it, he knows it's a knock.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you're sitting there and you don't know the situation of the game, you're going, wait a minute, how is that? Oh, okay, infield's in. But you've been up there, Gracie, a million times, and that runner in third, less than two, and you do what it takes to get it done. If the infield's in, that little dinker, that works all day long.
That's all it takes.
You know, and sometimes it takes a 12 hopper to shortstop. You don't get the 0-for-0 with a ribby, but you still get the job done.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't blame Joe Torre for bringing the infield in. You know, I mean, you know Mariano, he just broke so many bats. So if you play the infield back and Gonzo hits a little broken bat, you know, little. Right. Grounder to second base, he's going to beat out the double play, and the game's going to be, you know, and you're going to lose them. So I don't blame. I thought Joe Torre made the right play, but of course he goes down as a villain for playing the infield in. But
well, think of this too. That was when Knobloch was the second baseman, right?
Yes.
And it comes down to, and believe me, I've played with enough different managers. It comes down to how much does your manager trust the duo in the middle. I remember in Cincinnati, Davey Johnson would look at me and Larkin and leave it up to us. And we'd let him know what we were going to do in that situation. Yeah. I've been on other teams.
Two gold glovers, exactly.
I've been on other teams where they kind of know the skipper makes the determination, you know, depending on who's out there in the middle. So, no, I completely understand. In that situation, that was his feeling. And you're right. Being a left-handed hitter, I mean, it was Mariano's no walk in the park. But I felt as a right-handed hitter, I had a chance because I knew it was coming. I was going to try to take my base hit. It was the heaviest. It was the heaviest cutter I've ever faced.
Oh yeah,
and, it felt like a Maddox sinker on my bat. So the last thing I ever thought about with Mariano was taking him deep. I didn't even think about hitting a double. I thought about take your base hit the other way and move on. But for a lefty, it was a different ball game.
So I it's funny that you bring up Chuck Knoblauch, who had a hell of a career. He was player. He was a good player. But honestly, Booney, I if you want to be on the spot, are you going to trust Chuck Knoblauch to throw that force play at home plate?
Absolutely not. And I remember I played several postseason series against when Chuck in the 99, I was on the Braves and we played the Yankees in the World Series. And I'd never felt this way before about an opponent. And played the same position as me. Usually we don't like each other, a second baseman. But I remember thinking to myself, I felt so bad for him when he was going through that throwing thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to win so bad, but I want them to either take him out of the game. I couldn't imagine in New York at old Yankee Stadium getting a ground ball with two outs. And all I need to do is throw it from second to first. And I can't.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine being in that body. And I almost remember, because you're right, Chuck Knoblauch was a hell of a player. He's won multiple rings, really good player. I think he was a rookie of the year.
He had a terrific career.
I felt bad for him. Like, I don't want the ball hit to him in a big situation. And
because,
as an opponent,
because of his throwing. So
exactly.
Yeah. So it's so many things that people don't think about that, you know, it comes back to, you know, had you not mentioned that, I would have never thought about that. And here we are 20 some odd years later and I'm learning something new about what just happened, you know?
Gracie,
that's why I'm glad I did this with you today.
All right. I want to get on, you've been the color man for the Diamondbacks. I want to talk about last year and what an unbelievable run. If you told me that you knew it was going to happen and they were going to go to the World Series and almost win it, I'm going to call you Gracie. I'm going to call you a liar.
And
I sat there and watched every series and man, they just kept all the so-called experts. Oh, the Diamondbacks have no chance. And this is what pissed me off. That Russo guy, Mad Dog Russo. He's going to quit. You need to retire. Russo needs to retire. That's weak that you put that on the line and didn't. Anyway.
Exactly.
I watched this team. I watched them beat Milwaukee, who had a great pitching staff.
They go into all the games were going to be in Milwaukee. You know, it was a three-game series. They're all going to be in Milwaukee. You beat Burns, the Cy Young Award winner, and Peralta. He's got some of the best stuff in the game. On their home field, you go in and beat them two straight on their home field. Two of the best pitchers in the National League. So
without a doubt. And then you head to the Dodgers.
That shocked me.
And now you got the big bag Dodgers. What are you thinking? Oh, we're going to sweep them too.
Booney, I've been out covering this team for a long time since, you know, I've been a Diamondback since 2001. And the Diamondbacks have been the Dodgers' bitch for two decades. Like they can't beat the Dodgers. They just can't. And I mean, the Dodgers have just not only beat them, but they've embarrassed them for two decades. And trust me when I say that. So everybody's like, well, you know, gosh, you know, what a great run. You know, you get the Dodgers. Booney, not only do they beat them, but they sweep them. They sweep them three games, and the Dodgers never led. They never led. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, so now, guess what? They got to play the Philadelphia Phillies, who just went down and dismantled the best team in baseball last year, the Atlanta Braves. Freaking dismantled them. And You play through five games and the Phillies have got a 3-2 lead. And guess what? You got to go back to Philadelphia where they have just been hammering teams. And you got to win them both. They win game six and game seven in Philadelphia. And I'm just like, this is insane what they are doing. And then they had some chances in the World Series against Texas, but they made the mistake of pitching to Corey Seager when he was MVPing, yeah, and he made him pay with two huge home runs, and they got outplayed in the World Series, but I think they shocked the baseball world. I know they shocked me, and if I would have said I saw this coming, I would expect you to call me a liar. Yes.
I'll tell you what, I was, you know, I'm following it, and I'm going from series to series, breaking down, and I was right there. I'm like, this Diamondback team, I don't know how they can possibly do it, but you, like you said, they beat the Dodgers, and now you being a part of, you know, you're being a part of that ball club, you got to be over there going, maybe this is just one of those years. It's
one of those miracle years. Yeah.
Here's where it changed for me. Dodgers. Okay. They won 3. All right. They're hot. Dodgers were cold. They didn't play very well, but they went into Philly, and those first two games in Philly, and you talk about a hostile crowd.
Oh,
coming
my
on
goodness.
The road. That by far in the postseason last year, nowhere even held a candle to what the atmosphere was like in Philly. I saw the first two games in Philly. I said, okay, this Diamondback, this was a nice story.
This is where it
ends. The fact that they came back and beat them in seven games, I was just going, wait a minute. I know nothing about baseball. Everything I've ever thought I've known, I know nothing. And they're going to win the World Series, because you do not beat the Milwaukee Brewers, the Dodgers, and then beat Philly the way you beat them.
The way
it's
you
not
beat
destiny,
them.
And then all of a sudden, baseball just showed me that I still don't know anything about it. And then the Texas Rangers win, who nobody would have picked that at the beginning.
No,
of the postseason.
They were a wild card. Yeah.
So it was
awesome. Two wild card teams playing in the World Series. Exactly.
I thought it was great. You get that the world got to see, the nation got to see an Arizona Diamondback team that probably they weren't very familiar with, won 82 games in the regular season. So, or is it 82 or 84? I'm sorry.
I think it was 84.
Yeah, but, 84 games.
But I will tell you this, Booney. Okay, three names come to mind that showed on national TV every day. The Diamondbacks' ace is a guy named Zach Gallen.
Zach Gallen,
and he became a household name. You know, this guy's been really good for about 4 years. You know, really good, but. You know, you don't get a whole lot of fanfare when you're playing for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And then they got a kid named Merrill Kelly, the number two guy.
Yep.
That is a very good pitcher. It's a really good 1-2 punch. And you saw a kid, a rookie last year named Corbin Carroll. And I'm telling you, if this kid keeps his health and stays healthy, this guy, there is no reason why he's not going to be in Cooperstown in about 15 years.
Yeah, he's a real good player. Stole 50 bags his rookie year.
Stole 50 bags and with a messed up shoulder in the second half of the season, still hit like 23 home runs in his rookie season. He's a special player and he's a good kid, and he's going to be if you haven't heard of, and I'm not talking to you, but I'm just talking to people that are watching this. If you haven't heard of Corbin Carroll, you're about to.
You know what really impressed me, Gracie, about that run was the play from Perdomo, your shortstop.
The shortstop.
And Moreno, the catcher. I mean, came up big time in the postseason.
Yeah. And, you know, Gabby Moreno, he came over along with a guy named Lourdes Gurriel from the Toronto Blue Jays for kind of a baseball athlete, catcher, outfielder, a guy named Dalton Varsho. And Dalton Varsho goes to the Blue Jays, and the Diamondbacks really wanted this catcher, Gabby Moreno, but he was kind of expected to be the backup. And due to an injury, he got thrust into being the starting pitcher or starting catcher. And first of all, I loved him behind the dish. He's a great receiver, one of the best throwing arms in the league last year. And he was like 21. And then Gurriel ends up having a pretty strong year and played a pretty good left field. And, you know, it was just, and nobody expected, you know, who's Gabby Moreno? Well, people know him now. He's a frontline catcher. He's one of the better frontline catchers in the game right now. And he hit some big home runs in the postseason.
You added this offseason. You signed Gurriel long-term.
Right.
You added Eduardo Rodriguez from the Detroit Tigers. You got a Jock Peterson who's kind of got a knack for finding that postseason spotlight. And you got, from my Mariners, you got Eugenio Suarez, which I'll tell you what, he doesn't make for today's, you know, today's money. He's not one of those outrageously paid guys who make it $10 million. I know that sounds a lot to our generation.
Wouldn't that have been nice?
Oh, yeah. But what they're paying now, I mean, it's like you're getting a bargain. He's going to drive in 90 to 100. He's going to hit 25, and he's an underrated defender at third base. He's a good player.
I think he's a very good defender at third base.
He's a real good defender.
And Boney, you seen way more of him than I have. You know, I saw him with the Reds a couple years ago.
Right.
And, you know, it looks to me like he's a guy, especially in Arizona, where it's a little more hitter friendly than it is in Seattle.
Right.
I think he's probably going to hit at least 40 balls in the seats, but he's going to strike out over 200 times. That's kind of who he is in my book offensively.
And he's one of those guys. And I was just over in spring training with Seattle last week. And I asked, because I don't really know him, but he strikes me as one of those guys that everybody loves being around. He shows up. He shows up to the post every day. He's not a guy that misses games. He plays every day, and he's just well received in that clubhouse. He's one of those veteran leader type, and not the leader from a rah rah shishkum ba, but
of course
shows up in posts. And
lead,
I heard
by example, lead by example. Hold your teammates accountable. That's what being a leader is.
And I heard from the Mariners guys that they're really disappointed. And after they made that deal with Arizona, they're kind of having some buyer's remorse, like, ah, man, we should have kept Suarez to make our run. So I think you got a really good one, good clubhouse guy. And like you said, being in Arizona, a little more hitting friendly, you know, you're going to get 90 plus ribbies. You know, you're going to get 25, 30 homers. You're going to get a high strikeout total, but you're going to have a good guy in that clubhouse and create that good atmosphere. That division went to the Dodgers. Go to the Dodgers. It's like they have a super team now. You got
it goes to the Dodgers every. It goes to the Dodgers every year. Yeah,
right. You look at it. The key for me with the Dodgers is Walker Buehler healthy? If he's healthy, that's a different animal. You got Glass now coming over from Tampa Bay. That's a health thing. He's got to stay healthy. But when he is, he's electric frontline guy.
He's throwing 102 exactly.
Right. Yamamoto's in the mix. Supposedly he's never done it in the big leagues, but they don't just give $300 million to guys that they're on the fence about. And then Kershaw is going to be at the bottom of that rotation. How do you see the Dodgers? You get to see them all the time. Well, not so much. It's an even keeled program now. Not, they don't beat up on each other in the same division. It's an even schedule. Well,
I watch
looking at that division. Go ahead,
Booney. My wife, I married a Dodger fan. So I have to watch a lot of freaking Dodger games, and it's painful, but you know, I still have to do it. And I think, you know, and once again, think about the way the Diamondbacks beat the Dodgers in that Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, two MVP candidates. They combined to go 1 for 22. They went, and the one hit was an infield hit. And so in a three-game series, if you have your two superstar players have a rough series, you know, you're going down. And that's what happened. But you know, as long as you've got Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and now you add Ohtani, and it's like, you know, come on, Dodgers already. So, you know, obviously they're the pick. They're the wise pick. I think the Diamondbacks are gonna probably have to get a wild card. The team that's weird, Booney, in the West is the San Diego Padres. And they've been weird for about 3 years. There's just so much talent on. They've got two of the best players in the game in Machado and Tatis. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then they had Soto last year and they didn't do anything. But they need some more pitching. They've got some bullpen. I don't know if they're going to bring Cy Young winner Blake Snell. I don't know if they're bringing him back or not. I think he's still unsigned. But that's just a weird team. Just an underachieving team, in my opinion. Bob Melvin now has gone up to San Francisco. Any team with Bob Melvin as the manager is going to be a better team. But they've underachieved the last couple of years as well.
I think you look at the Giants. They got Webb at the top. He's great.
He's terrific.
They just added Matt Chapman, the third baseman for Toronto. Lee from Korea, that big sign. And I'm hearing Snell might be in the mix. If Snell goes to the Giants, now it's a different ballgame.
That's a whole different story, exactly.
Gracie, before, tell me what you think of this. And this is my theory with the San Diego Padres. A year ago,
the Rockies will come in last.
Correct. Here's my thought on the Padres. And tell me if this makes any sense to you. You got a guy, Fernando Tatis. Does what he does, gets caught, gets suspended for a year from the game, right. Steroids. He comes back hat in hand a year ago. Obviously, to me, still one of the top talents in all the game. He's a Robert Acuna type player to me.
Without a doubt.
But you know shortstops, and you know the ego on shortstops, second baseman, middle infielders. And when you're told to go to a corner, it's kind of like a hit to your, like, wait a minute, no, I don't play the corner. All of a sudden, Tatis is a shortstop playing right field, ends up winning a gold glove. You get a young guy, Cronenworth, who's their second baseman. You move him to first. Now, if I was early in my career and you moved me to first base, I'd be like, wait a minute, all my value's at second, turning
double
play.
You're pissed off, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so you got a young Cronenworth playing first. And now all of a sudden, they just told Bogarts, by the way, Bogarts, we just signed you, the superstar from Boston, to play short, you're going to play second base. So now you got Cronenworth playing first, who's supposed to be playing second. You got Bogarts, who signed as a shortstop. He's going to play second. You still got Tatis in right field. Tell me if you think there's any validity in that's part of the reason that maybe things didn't click from an offensive. They're going to go on TV and say all the right things. Hey, I'm here to
Very
win.
Well
I'm just
said.
Here. But that people never bring that up. And I always think, you don't understand when you have major players, guys that you depend on in the middle of that lineup and you get them a little out of sorts because you're putting them in spots they don't want to be, that can rise to the forefront and be a problem.
Boone, you're gonna love this analogy. And you know what the Padres front office has done? You know those snow globes?
Yeah.
You know that you're shaking the snow globes all over the place.
Right. The Christmas things.
That is exactly what the Padres front office has done. They take all these terrific players and they shake the snow globe. And now you're going to go out to right and you're going to go to first and you're going to, yeah, you're a stud short. You're going to go to third. That's what they're shaking the globe. And right. It doesn't need to be shaken. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, you're pissing people off. They're not going to say it outwardly. I already see Bogarts doing the interview. You know, he's saying all the right things. Hey, I'm just here to win. I want to do what's ever best for the team, but you can feel it like, because I know shortstops. I mean, a shortstop to come to second base, that's a slap in the face.
Like, absolutely.
Wait a minute, I'm a shortstop. You know, they're the best defender on the field, always have been. But the little things like that, and it's not like it's a veteran situation where the guy's getting older, he's 35, he's at the end of his career, he makes that natural move to third base or to second base. That's different.
Yeah, but like Ripken did, like Machado
right.
did. Yeah,
you got guys in their prime getting moved. And really have nothing to say about it.
That's my point. The globe doesn't need to be shaken. You've got some studs, but once again, they're, you know, even if you're a little bit unhappy, you know, not just irate, but even if you're a little bit pissed off, it's going to affect you over a 162 game season.
All right. So you got the Dodgers winning. I mean, it's a super team. I have to say that.
Agreed.
Too. I mean, the only thing the Dodgers don't win is there's so many expectations. And if something happens and injuries or or at a, you know, too many injuries to overcome. The Dodgers have to win that division. Diamondbacks probably as a wild card. I asked Candiotti, buddy of yours, he's over there in Arizona as well. Under over, I'm going to set it at 90. Diamondbacks come in under or over?
I think slightly under.
Slightly under, 89.
90 wins is a lot.
That's a lot of wins.
I mean, it's a lot. I would say I'm going to guess, you know, mid 80s, you know, anywhere from 84 to 87. That's going to be my guess.
All right, Mark Grace, this has been a lot of fun, man. It's good catching up with you. And
I agree, Bodie. I can't thank you enough for the invite. It's always great to talk baseball with a guy that absolutely knows what he's talking about. And I appreciate you having me, and let's do it again sometime. Okay, pal.
You got it, Gracie. Catch up next time. I see you. I don't know where that will be, but for all you watching now, you can watch the Bread Boom podcast on YouTube. For those of you listening on the Odyssey app, I appreciate you tuning in. Until next time, we'll be right here.